thanks for coming. I'll be moderating some questions up here, but this format works a lot better with your participation. We will have mics in the room, so please, I'd encourage you to ask any questions you have. So with that, I'll invite George Cope up. Good, how are you?
Good.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, George. And this is George's last investor conference as a CEO. So everybody get your questions ready.
And ask Mirko, he's over here.
Really, George, thanks for coming. As you complete, obviously a very successful run as CEO, as all your shareholders are pretty happy with that, I guarantee you. But let's dig into the fundamentals here. And
sure.
I thought we'd start on the wireline side, and obviously, you know, the big product and the big brand there is Five. It's well established in the market now. Can you give us an update on how your thinking on that product is?
Yeah, I mean, the fiber investments, you know, as everyone here will know, we're halfway through that investment thesis now. The payback's clear. There is no technology on the horizon that touches it. The infrastructure in the country, when it's completed, combined with what our competitor in the West is doing, tell us will put the country clearly as the leader in the G7 in terms of broadband wireline technology, and then from a competitive standpoint, gives us, you know, an unbelievable roadmap for broadband going forward for both business and on the consumer side. You know, the stats and the numbers, the results, I think, are starting to stand up to themselves. We're clearly competing well head-to-head against the cable competitors. We're the only ones in Canada with a 1.5 gig product for the consumer. We have a roadmap to take it to 5. We have a roadmap after that takes it to 10. I mean, it's kind of hard to comprehend what would drive that type of requirements, but over time it'll happen. Modem technology is moving at a pace that will allow us ultimately to also allow that on the wireless devices themselves. So there's a tremendous roadmap for 5G. But not relative to where fixed broadband with fiber is in terms of the speeds you're going to have into the homes. And the other real underpinning, as I've said over and over, tremendous investment return for us on the fiber is also going to come on the back of 5G, because we're 85 to 90% fiber to our cell sites now. Without fiber to the cell sites, 5G is an academic exercise. You have to have the fiber to see the speeds. And so we're really riding the back of the capital program that investors here see in wireline, but it really is quite a dividend for the wireless business as well. And that's why you've seen our wireless capital intensity at around, 7% this year. But part of that's because the burden of it's really in the wireline business. And as it builds out, we go buy cell sites, we put it in place. So, that investment, when we made it, was a little tougher than where we are now. And now that we see also the benefits coming on the wireless side, and on the business side, a lot of corporations looking for fiber builds now, particularly retail competitiveness. They want to go national. They don't want it just in Toronto or just in Montreal. And we have a program in place with a number of major retailers to do that, to go into rural markets. And the great news is if we go into that rural market with fiber and cell sites, that allows us to offer some consumer services. It also allows us to offer some of this, the million home rural build that we're doing as well. So it's actually fitting in. The strategy is fitting perfectly. Now it's just to continue to execute on it.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there. Maybe let's just stay on wireline for the moment.
Sure.
When you introduced the product, a lot of it was branding, and you were hoping to capitalize on word of mouth, and obviously that's been successful, but the cable companies didn't just roll over. They've responded with their own technologies and their own pricing schemes. How would you characterize the state of competitiveness across your footprint now?
Well, I mean, it's every competitor is different. It's very competitive. The star of the show for us the last number of years has clearly been our IPTV product and our Alt product. Our competitors have rolled out now products that people would say are similar. But we certainly don't feel we've lost any momentum or any of that positioning. And now, of course, the star of the show for us becomes also now with the fiber. And I think the one thing with the fiber build that I think has been most interesting for me to watch is once you build it, it's not like everyone's life says tomorrow morning I have to change service provider, because one, we have very good competitors, and two, you know, life's busy. But what you do find is when people are moving or there's a change and you know we have fiber built, that's when the requests come in, and that's where we start to see the penetration. So, you know, by all accounts, we are capturing the market share we talked about within that space, and there's certainly no reason why we would blink on the fiber investment. It just continues to show us better churn metrics, better operational metrics, and clearly, as I said, sets us up for both business and consumer on both of our products, which I think is the underpinning of what's really, really making that investment just feel tremendous for us going forward.
You used to tell us that the Internet product was the backbone of it, but what got people off the couch was the video, the TV.
Right.
Has that changed now that you know, so many people stream?
It's interesting. Well, you know, our all-TV product is clearly a streaming TV product, because really it's TV without set-top box. And we sell it with our Internet product. It has all the same content capabilities that our IPTV product has with the set-top box. It's priced very differently because, of course, we don't have the truck roll. We don't have the equipment to put in. We also limit it to two streams, which manages some of the cord-cutting thread at the price point we have it at. And it's actually been very successful. And frankly, ultimately, that time frame will obviously, Merkel and the team will lay that time frame out. But at some point, of course, you may be down to no set-top box. And so one of the issues for our team is to continue to merge our alt-TV technology with our IPTV technology. So, you know, we continue to have positive subscriber growth on the video side. And, of course, it combines with an Internet. So that's obviously those are the two revenue streams. No doubt the value proposition is on the fiber side. The content side is critical, but the revenue mix has moved more towards the broadband side.
And maybe level set for people here today and on the line. Where are you in terms of penetration of fiber, and what's the update on how you see that progressing as we go down the road?
Well, as I said, we're over 50% of the fiber footprint completed now, and we're just it's like building out for this market. It's building out 905, and we just push out. I think this year, that and the rural wireless is about 700,000 or so additional premises, business and consumer. It's going to be Merkel's call. My instincts are it'll be that type of run rate you'll see going forward. And, you know, over the next 5 years or so, we'll literally complete, you know, a lot of the large part of the buildouts.
Right.
It's as I said, it's frankly it's just doing everything we wanted it to do.
Yeah.
We feel very well positioned competitively and really ready for 5G, which is really links it all back together.
Right. You also touched on the business side, the enterprise side, and that's been you guys have highlighted that this year, that's been a decent business, or certainly better than the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of wobbly headlines out there in terms of the macro picture. How's the enterprise segment performing?
You know, our enterprise business and our small, medium business certainly have had a better run the last 24 months than we had seen. And that is economic driven, we think competitively driven. Also a demand, as I mentioned, from our corporate clients now for fiber. You know, it used to be we had to convince a company that why would they want fiber to a branch, a retail location. Now the question isn't it's not do we want it, we want it everywhere. So we don't just want to hear about Bell's build in Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa. We have to know that it's going to happen over a large geography. And, of course, that creates long-term relations with these important clients for us as well. And it's more of a strategic buy for them than clearly just a price buy. So it's not as commoditized as some of our other businesses. Having said that, you know, that area still is not some type of rapid growth wireline. We get some great top-line growth in wireless B2B, but on the wireline side, it's still just a better result than we had historically. And we'll have to keep working at it as we go forward.
Yeah. Is there any difference between the big, large enterprises and the small and medium enterprises? I would think that would be an area where there should be better growth in an economy like this.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, one of the things for us on the small side is it's pretty hard for anyone to walk into literally any small business and not see video. And we had not played in that space. So rather than have, you know, of course our cable guys will get up to the exact opposite, and they should, but I mean, reality is rather than have our internet cut because they're going to move their cable TV in and combine it. We've been very aggressively on the TV side and the small business side to help get some stickiness on that product as well. And that's had some success over the long term.
Yeah. Late last month, CRTC issued a decision on internet wholesalers. Yeah, got a little bit of profile. Maybe recap.
I retired the day before
that. Yeah. Maybe recap for people who aren't haven't looked at that, what the implications are for Bell, and what your message has been in response to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think our view, these decisions always have to be balanced. I think this one wasn't as balanced as we've seen recently. I think it was a disappointing decision for, I think, anyone in the space, quite frankly, who's following carefully. You know, there are two components to the announcement. One of it is a retroactive component, where I think in total now about $350 million is being paid back to or being paid to organizations with no obligation to pass that on to anyone, meaning the consumer. So there's some questions around the logic around that. And I think all of our peers have also disclosed that, you know, therefore there's a one-time implication for us. I think we said it's roughly around around $100 million. And we talked about immediately if we're putting $100 million of cash out, then we're just going to reduce our rural footprint from 1.2 million to 1 million households as a result, because the money that's real money, and so that's what we'll do. And it has to be obviously always implications some of these decisions. And then on the price point going forward, probably too aggressive relative to the cost structure. I think if you look at some of the pricing that our peers sell some of their products at, some of our fiber wasn't impacted with this particular decision. I think they would, and I would concur with them, that it doesn't reflect their true cost. So there are issues there to be sorted out. And you know, this is a long game, so you recognize where we are in the cycle, where we are in the calendar, what's happening in the country, and then you move forward after those critical events take place here, and you go back in and you rediscuss these files. And I'm up. Look, if you kind of step back and think of Canada, in 4G we lead G7. There's no country in the G7 anywhere close to the speeds we're offering on wireless. You know, go on and use it now, you'll get 60 or 80 meg speeds. I mean, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that had the U.S. and China on Saturday. If anybody read it, Canada's well ahead of both those. In fact, first generation 5G arguably would be slower than Canada's 4G LTE now. We'll have to see. Might be. And then if you go on the wireline side, we talked about it, this will be one of the most fiber-connected countries in the world. So we are going to lead the G7. And on the rural side, technology is going to fix the issue. So truthfully, what we really need is just the regulator to say we have a market with four players, it's highly competitive, well-capitalized, balanced, and let's step away, because we're leading the world now anyway from a technology perspective. My own personal view is 6 months from now, Canada will be the number one place in the world for 5G. Because of the advancement of fiber investment that we made, if we give ourselves the environment that we have. So, you know, that's work, and we'll work with whichever government wins, we'll work with them as we have in the past, and I think we'll find the right balance. I think investors should relax. We'll find the right balance. This is not, you know, the type of decision we wanted to see, but it's a long game.
You're playing the long game, but as you mentioned, over the next 6 weeks, it's going to get pretty noisy with the election. It seems like the telcos are going to be the target. It used to be the banks. Seems like it's the telcos now. What would you say to investors?
Investors that we own Bell Media and we love elections because a lot of advertising revenue. So we're perfectly hedged.
You got the hedge, yeah.
We're hedged on all these products. So we like that piece of it. Look, I think we've seen elections. Let's end the election and let's see what the policies are and what government wins, and then we'll come back and do the work. You know, quite frankly, policies for telecom aren't going to be set over the next 6 weeks, or probably wouldn't be a good time to do that. So we'll put our energy into it post the election. I think facilities-based competition has been supported by both governments in office. We've seen no blinking on the concept of facility-based strategy. We may have gone a little too far on some of the pricing recently, but I am completely optimistic that this country and both governments that have been in office understand the importance of facilities-based competition. And we opened up a fourth facilities-based competitor in wireless. Those companies have put billions of dollars of capital at risk, including auctions. I would assume that their perception of the bargain is that they're building out their network, going to be able to monetize that network, and I think that'll be an important story from them obviously not as much from the incumbents, that I think will be listened to going forward.
Okay. Well, let's switch over to wireless for a moment. I mean, you posted an excellent second quarter coming off a couple of years of really solid growth. What's your assessment of wireless? You know, we are in a very competitive seasonal time right now with the back to school.
Yeah, I mean, the market, as we know, has had a number of pricing changes. It is highly competitive. We have three core brands, the Bell brand, the Virgin brand, and then we launched the Lucky brand, which put us into the prepaid segment. We had not played there well. Everyone knows that me doing that, maybe. One of us is. And, oh, I know what's going on. Don't want to say it's the phone line. That would be really dangerous. So, you know, all three of our brands are working. Our distribution channels are where we want them to be. Our network leadership is where we want it to be. And so now, as it's always been, a capturing a leadership in the market share. We saw that in the previous quarter. We'll see, obviously, how the results continue. But we're very comfortable with our position in the market. We obviously had an excellent quarter. And for us, that be in all segments now allows us to migrate clients through the different price programs and different speeds. And that's where we were probably a couple of years ago lagging one of our competitors.
Right.
Now I think we're on par with them.
Yeah. You touched on it. There's been, you know, some fairly significant changes to some of the pricing plans being offered. You didn't lead that, but you followed very quickly. I mean, we can debate the timing, but I don't think it was a shock to you. What's your assessment of how those plans will impact the marketplace?
Yeah, well, as I said, as you said on the last call, we obviously didn't lead either of these price changes in the marketplace. I think there is a fairly strong commercial rationale on the hardware program where, you know, the idea of us using our balance sheets to finance the hardware, if we're successful in getting from 2 to 3 years on the actual pricing for the consumer after the election, I think we should be successful. There's only logical Canadians would pay less for the handset if it was amortized over the 3 years.
Maybe just explain to people what
you're talking about. Well, in Canada, for I think everyone knows we're allowed only 2-year contracts. We can't do 3. And the concept has been now that we've got the hardware programs where people basically put nothing down and get it financed, as TELUS had led the market on, and we've reacted as our competitor has. One of the things, I think one of the competitors, I think it was the Rogers folks, tried to then go to 3 years, which we think is the right thing to do for Canadians.
Yeah.
It lowers the price point, and I think the CRTC is going to look at it after the election. I'm pretty confident it will change because it's in the interest of everyone. Mm-hmm. Canadians end up paying a lower price for the handset, which I think is a big conversation these days, and we, of course, end up with an amortization of our financing in a better situation. So I think there's some logic to what our competitors there, and we follow them in the marketplace. Not as aggressively as they have, only because we've got to build some other programs to make sure we're fully competitive there. So I think that makes sense. We've seen in the U.S., people can measure how those programs work in the U.S. And use their own view. We're following, we didn't create it. So clearly we had some views, but we don't find that. On the pricing on the airtime, it's just a competitive market. We'll always compete.
Right.
And so we go to whatever the data prices are in the marketplace. BCE is going to always make sure it competes with our peers. Clearly it wasn't something we led, but of course we changed our pricing the next morning.
Yeah.
So if there's any doubt about how competitive Canada is, just watch it changes when it needs to. And we'll see how that reacts. We'll see how ARPU does. I talked on the call that, you know, we expected ARPU growth this year, but there's no doubt, as I said on the call, that whatever the ARPU growth this year is, it's going to be less than it would have been without that decision.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear. It's not something that adds to the story. It's something that moderates the story for sure.
Yeah. You'll be gone, and it'll be Mirko's problem, but there is a wireless review coming.
Yes.
In January.
Yeah.
And MVNOs are going to be topical, it
yes.
seems. What's your message to investors?
Well, I would say, you know, my view on that is, I always think in my 30, started the industry when it started in wireless. I think this might be the fourth or fifth, Mirko, that we've had this review.
Yeah.
We have a facilities-based competition structure. We have three new entrants who have spent billions of dollars to create the fourth player. I think it would be very hard to show a compelling reason as to what the economic benefit to the Canada would be to a change in the way the environment is structured today. That's my own view, especially at the doorstep of 5G, where we're about to make the most significant investment we've made since 4G. And I think, I honestly believe part of the bargain for the new competitors would have been that they had to be facilities-based players. You don't have forced MVNO regulation in the United States. Under some talk, that market might end up at three. Be really unusual for us to have four and have any type of truly intellectual argument that would support that from an investment standpoint for our country. So we'll see how that unfolds. Our position will be very clear. The market's as competitive as they've been. The infrastructure bills required are the largest we've seen in years. And it looks like the industry seems to have digested the fourth player. Investors seem to be doing fine with it. And we have some pretty credible players as those fourth players. These are large organizations playing now. So everyone's well-funded, and it's exactly the right balance between consumer, investor, and technology that we need. So I'm optimistic.
Right. Any other agenda on that wireless review you think is noteworthy to the investment community?
No, I don't. Not that comes to mind. I think it's. And I said we've done this file before.
Yeah.
It's always good to review where we are in the industry. But you know, the fourth players are just through some of the investment cycle, and they're staring down, as we all are, the next investment cycle. And I think the fact that the United States doesn't have mandated MVNOs and is it a structure, we'll see how it unfolds, and arguably we may end up having more competitors in the U.S. does in wireless. Look at the geography of Canada. I think it would be very hard to, you know, intellectually, for the country's interest, argue how that's going to create investment for the country. But let's get through the election and see where all that ends up.
You know, 5G is coming. It's such a profound and systemic change. It's permeating all your strategic decisions, clearly. Where are you on that roadmap as an organization?
Set some timelines. Well, worst part of retiring is missing that. That's going to be a lot of fun for investors, for everyone. It's such a fun, you know, interesting technology to watch. It's really the coming together of wireless and wireline technology because of the fiber. In terms of where we are, we've got to get the auction completed next year. You really want to see that next year in Canada, the 3.5 auction, because that's obviously tremendous spectrum for 5G. So you'll see that. My own belief is, as I've said, 60 months from now, Canada will lead the world in 5G. I don't think there'll be any country with better networks because of the infrastructure, the competitive dynamic. First generation is on the mobile side of 5G. May at first not be faster than what we're already doing at 4G LTE, but it's what we're seeing around the world. But when you go beyond that and you start truly into the microcell sites, you're talking about some latency advantages for business and some speed that is, you know, obviously at levels we're not seeing. So that's going to drive usage, and it's going to make the investment thesis positive. I think what amazes me the most relative to wireline and for our wireless businesses is how, and I'll say this within context, how affordable 5G is. You know, I mean, the concept that RC to IM wireless would have to go north of 10% for 5G, I don't see it. We're going to, because of the investment we made. So there is a true benefit to the advancement of 4G LTE in Canada that truly makes the rollout of 5G something really for investors that is going to look economically, I think, exciting for investors. It truly is. That'll take time to see it, but people are going to see it because of the scale of wireless and because of the investment we've already made to set ourselves up going forward.
Is there any questions in the audience for George?
George, can you elaborate on
Bruce, can you hang on one sec for a mic?
George, can you elaborate on your comments on Huawei and how critical they are to the 5G network?
Yeah, well, you know, the Huawei story, I think that'll unfold, I think, post-election as well. There's really, our position has been fairly clear and transparent with folks, and we've used Huawei at our radio access layer for 10 years now. We don't use it in the core of our network, the technology. That's a commercial decision, not the other types of decisions around security or what have you. For 5G, we would not fight the idea of some type of ban on the core for the wireless technology, but at the radio access layer, they're a tremendous supplier. There are no security issues at the radio access layer that even people should be thinking of. But this is well beyond the telecom space. This file is obviously a global file with many complicated issues. So we would like to see the ability to use that technology at the radio access layer. And I think it would be the best interest of Canadians and investors that we did. And if there is any security issues at all, it's probably some conversation around the core, and we are in no way opposed to any type of ban on the core, only because we don't have an intention to use it commercially anyway at the core. That's kind of where we are. I'd like to see it all sorted out not too far after the elections, because we're on a roadmap around 5G now that we've got to sort through.
Thank you. Follow up on that. Who would you prefer for the core then?
I won't. We'll run our usual race.
One of the two.
Yeah, I'm not even going to talk about the suppliers because I know why I get asked that question, so I'm not commenting. It's nothing to do with BCG stock rights.
If the wholesale, if the CRTC doesn't change the wholesale broadband pricing, are there ways to compete besides, because you can't compete on price, besides customer service and bundling, are there other ways to compete to differentiate with wholesale pricing?
Yeah, well, here's what I would say. We launched the Virgin Internet brand 2, maybe 3 years ago now. And it completely focused on if there's a value segment for a broadband that wholesalers are competing in, Virgin's competing head-to-head with that. And that's what it was designed to do. One of the reasons we don't even report wholesale internet subs anymore, frankly, because it's a regulatory requirement. We have no strategic interest in the business at all. Our strategic business is our brands, and so we've created the Virgin brand. And we have other brands that we can always consider as we unfold to play the different segments of the market. That's the way we'll compete with that in the marketplace, and that is actually the best way, we think, to compete with it. It's a little bit of what we learned from the wireless structure years ago in Canada, that as much as we did see brands like Koodo and Virgin and now Lucky and Fido and all these different brands we have like multiple brands, the models for investors for these companies turned out to be you're better to be in the space yourself, obviously, and preserving some of that revenue stream than preserving it at a wholesale level, and making it also extremely difficult for other competitors to compete. That's our job, right? It's a highly competitive marketplace, and we have so many brands now in wireless. I think you'll see some of that, more of that happen on the wireline side as a result of this, and you saw it happen with us on Virgin. I think our Fido folks have it. I think now Videotron's done something. So, just see more competition as a result of it, and a little harder to differentiate than the wireless is on that, so you got to work through how you differentiate for the value prop, but we're all, I think, working on that. We certainly are at Bell, trying to sort that out. That's all on the consumer side, not on the business side. This side's a little different. Just really about selling under the Bell brand.
Anyone else out there? Okay, George, just a few of the smaller items. Talk about media a bit. TV advertising has been a good business.
Media business has had a tremendous year. We're really happy with the strategic issues around Crave. I mean, we've been at that 5 years. Someone's telling me, I was reading ourselves internally. But that product is really doing what we want it to do. It's a stream product, or it's in your, on your traditional TV. It's great content. Frankly, it's tremendous content. It's priced. The aggregation of Alt TV with our media assets and the other media assets is intended ultimately to also help the other media companies should benefit. We've had some great events, obviously, even just something like the tennis on the weekend. All of these things bring eyeballs. Average, elections are good for, obviously, top line. So the media business had a very, very good year. And I have to be honest, better than we would have anticipated that it would have had. So really, it's been a good spot, a very good spot competitively as well.
Right.
And the other thing I should just mention, I think just in this interest rate environment for our investors, we haven't had the question, but I'll just clarify, with even the change of the discount rate that's taken place, the way under Glenn's leadership as our CFO and under David Dennison's leadership and Gord Nixon's, our pension was set up, a lot of our funds were rolled into bonds over the last 7 or 8 years, so we'd never go through this issue again. So even with the discount rate dropping as dramatically it has this year, our bond performance in the portfolio is enough that we're still at about 100% funded on the pension, which means, you should not be looking, and will not be looking for some type of one-time payment in the pension fund this year, given what's happened. The bond portfolio performance has worked perfectly to hedge against the change in discount rate, and we were not set up that way a decade ago. So we're in a good spot there.
And you just
3%.
Yes, yeah, we think it was our lowest 10-year financing, equal to the lowest we had ever done, 2.9%. So obviously positioning us well from an overall cost of funding. And so, you know, we're getting this it puts us in a great spot cash flow-wise.
Yeah.
That's really the point of the investment community, is that there isn't something around the corner from a cash perspective that this year that has any impact.
Is there anything you're working on or thinking about on the M&A file? Probably more than anything you're there.
Not from my end. I have to ask Merkel, and he's not going to answer. No. Seriously, no.
Any last questions out there? One more.
Well, two things. They're not really quick, but you can stop answering them quickly. But one is, you say Canada's going to be leader in 5G, but we haven't even had the auctions, and you've got, you know, Verizon is claiming they're already rolled out in 12 cities. So
sure.
Maybe you can just clarify that. And secondly, on the pension, you guys are less conservative on both the investment returns and the discount rate, so you may be funded, and congratulations for doing that. That was not the case years ago. But should you not be more conservative on the asset returns and the discount rates?
On the second question, I don't think there's a country more conservative on discount rate calculations than Canada on pension funds. So, and I think it's the most conservatively funded pension fund in the country. We put billions of dollars into it. So as an investor, I'd be completely relaxed with it, 100% relaxed. Under the leadership of Glenn and David Dennison and Gordon Nixon, you can't get better in this country. So we're extremely well positioned from a pension perspective. On the other one, no, what Verizon's doing is amazing, but it's doing a lot of it on the fixed wireless side. My belief, we'll see if I'm right, in 60 months, Canada will lead the world in 5G. That's my belief, because with our fiber networks that we've built, which you will find very few countries that have 95% of their cell sites with backhaul fiber in place, with the infrastructure agreements we have, such as network sharing agreements we have in Canada, with the 3.5 auction next year, which is beautiful spectrum for 5G, the gun won't go off till we're done 3.5, but watch how fast our country moves and how our peers move in this space over a 4 to 5 year period. And it's easy for me to give a prediction now because I won't be here. But I am fully confident that 60 months from now, Canada will be a leader in 5G, and all we need is, we have an investment thesis, we have four competitors who are competing, and let's get the regulator out of the way, and let's get Canadians having access to this technology as quickly as we can.
We're going to have to shut it down there. George, for the last time, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure working with you.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Enjoy retirement.